6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting the U.S. preparing to expand its fight against the Islamic State. U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter emerged from meetings with Iraqi officials in Baghdad Wednesday, including Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi, offering to accelerate efforts to defeat the Islamic State, which occupies large parts of the country, including the contested provincial capital, Ramadi.
I had a very productive meeting with Prime Minister Abadi, and also separately a meeting with the defense minister, discussed with them the desire of the United States and its other coalition partners to accelerate progress, the kind of progress that the Iraqi forces are exhibiting in Ramadi.
He said he told the Iraqi officials it's important to recapture Ramadi, then retake the northern city of Mosul. Meanwhile, the U.S. military announces withdrawing a dozen fighter jets from Turkey. The warplanes conducted airstrikes in both Syria and Iraq. U.N. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon Wednesday warned Burundi is on the brink of civil war that could threaten the region.
What we have seen over the past few days is chilling. I have asked Mr. Jamal Ben Omar, my special advisor, to go to the region before the end of this week to speak to the African Union, the countries in the region, and of course, the government of Burundi. An inclusive political dialogue is needed urgently. We must do all we can to prevent the mass violence and act decisively should it erupt.
The UN chief suggested a peacekeeping force may be necessary to quell violence that erupted in April following news that President Pierre Nkurunziza would seek a controversial third term. This is VOA News. The U.S. Central Bank Wednesday boosted its benchmark interest rate for the first time in nearly a decade, a decision that immediately increased borrowing costs for businesses and consumers and could have an impact throughout the world economy. The chairman of the Federal Reserve, Janet Yellen, said it was time for such action.
Were the FOMC to delay the start of policy normalization for too long, we would likely end up having to tighten policy relatively abruptly at some point to keep the economy from overheating and inflation from significantly overshooting our objective. Such an abrupt tightening could increase the risk of pushing the economy into recession.
Fed policymakers increased the key rate by a quarter of a percentage point, pushing it up from near zero due to improving economic conditions. But Yellen cautioned more rate hikes are possible in 2016. The U.S. Embassy in Abuja has called on Nigerian officials to investigate weekend clashes between troops and a Shia Muslim group that reportedly left dozens, perhaps hundreds, dead. It said the government should quickly, credibly, and transparently investigate these events and hold to account any individuals found to have committed crimes. The army accused members of the Islamic Movement for Nigeria of sparking clashes, blocking a highway in the city of Zaria to an army convoy, and trying to assassinate the army chief of staff. Sect members deny the charges. The military has taken the group's leader, Ibrahim Zakzaki, and his wife into custody. The Obama administration has informed Congress of a nearly $2 billion arms sale package for Taiwan. It includes two naval frigates, anti-tank missiles, and amphibious assault vehicles. A U.S. spokesman said the deal is consistent with the U.S. commitment to help maintain Taiwan's defense. Josh Earnest is a White House spokesman.
Today's notification is consistent with the Taiwan Relations Act and U.S. support for Taiwan's ability to maintain a sufficient self-defense capability. I would hasten to add that there has been no change to our longstanding One China policy that's based on the three joint communiques and the Taiwan Relations Act.
China, which regards Taiwan as part of its territory, summoned the U.S. charge d'affaires to lodge a protest saying the sale should be canceled in order to avoid harming bilateral relations. National and regional leaders in Somalia have ended 3 days of talks on elections next year. They decided to dissolve the government next September. Members of parliament and the president, Hassan Sheikh Mohamed, would be allowed to seek re-election. They also decided the election will be conducted using both a district and clan process. They'll meet again next month. Ukraine says it will suspend trade with Russian-occupied Crimea by mid-January. Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk saying Wednesday the ban will begin in 30 days and affect everything but humanitarian aid. Last year's annexation of Crimea by Russia plunged relations between Kiev and Moscow into crisis. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Amori Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 17th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda's Electoral Commission has issued the final voters list for the country's 2016 presidential election.
The law requires the Electoral Commission to issue the soft copy of the National Voters Register after the nomination of the presidential candidate, which the commission did.
Jotam Taramua is the spokesman for the Electoral Commission of Uganda. Rebel secession in the Central African Republic underscores security challenges for the country. Libya's unity agreement delayed until today, Thursday. Cameroon calls for more vigilantes against Boko Haram. And the International Labour Organization says more than half of worldwide migration is migrant workers.
In many countries, domestic work is not regarded as work. And therefore, irrespective of who is performing domestic work, national or migrants, that person does not benefit from, the protection of labor laws.
Manuela Tome is director of the ILO's Condition of Work and Equality Department. And a Zimbabwe female member of parliament brings her baby to parliament to make a point about the lack of accommodation for mothers in parliament. Those stories plus Marco Oman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Electoral Commission of Uganda has issued the final voters list for next year's general election to all participating presidential candidates and their parties. The country's electoral law mandates the Electoral Commission to present an electronic copy of the voters list to the parties and their candidates after the nomination process. The law also requires the Electoral Commission to issue a hard copy to the candidates 2 weeks before the presidential and parliamentary election. Electoral Commission spokesman Jotam Taramua tells reporter Peter Clouty that the commission has been proactive and transparent.
The law requires the Electoral Commission to issue the soft copy of the National Voters Register after the nomination of the presidential candidates, which the commission did. But it also requires that 2 weeks before polling, we issue the hard copies of the National Voters Register. So the commission this time did not wait for those 2 weeks before polling, and we have already issued the hard copies of the National Voters Register to the participating presidential candidates.
How credible do you think this voter list? Because while you were compiling, opponent raised several concerns about this. Now that you've given it to them, have you gotten any feedback so far, at least 2 days since you gave it to them? And how are you going to address this concern ahead of the election?
Those allegations will always come up, but they are baseless. Because you know when we registered, we sent this register back in the field and called upon every other person to come and verify and scrutinize and authenticate it. And that was done. We highly publicized that. We got some recommendations of who we should exclude, who we should include, and all those we cleaned up. And so the final copy that is out is the verifiable copy of the National Voters Register. So I don't expect anybody to raise those kinds of allegations.
Well, I understand the Electoral Commission has also suspended all parliamentary campaigns till next week, Wednesday, before it begins. What necessitated this action from the Electoral Commission of Uganda?
Well, the Speaker of the National Parliament of Uganda wrote to the Electoral Commission indicating that he would require parliamentarians from the 15th of December up to the 23rd. And that the reason given was that there were important national legislations that required the full house. And in order to ensure that there is a level playing field, we could not allow the other contenders who are not members of parliament to continue campaigning when the members of parliament are back in the house legislating. So we decided to put the campaigns on hold until after the 23rd, when these ones are also done with their parliamentary duties. Then after that, they can go back in the field and meet their colleagues there and resume their campaigns.
Wouldn't this disrupt the calendar for the parliamentary or legislative election?
No, it will not, because campaigns when they resume as before, they will end on the 16th of February.
Jotam Taramua is the spokesman for the Electoral Commission of Uganda. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Kampala. A rebel leader in the Central African Republic has called for independence in the north and says much-awaited elections this month should be cancelled. While this secessionist claim is unlikely to stand, it underscores the depth of the crisis in the Central African Republic and the years of international military engagement that may still be needed. Katerina Hoya reports for VOA from Bamako, Mali.
Transitional authorities in Dakar are brushing off a rebel call for secession in the north. Government spokesperson Redi Sokeita said elections, which began Sunday with the constitutional referendum, will take place in all regions. The presidential and parliamentary votes are scheduled for December 27. Sokeita says just because the rebels are making a lot of noise, that doesn't mean they can have their way. Independence is not something we can accept, he says. With the help of the international forces, he says the government will retake control of all the territory. The National Army crumbled in early 2013 as the now-dissolved Seleka Rebel Coalition from the north seized control of the country. Even today, no government officials, a few civil servants, are present in the parts of the north and east that remain under rebel control. On Tuesday, a spokesman for rebel leader Nouredine Adam, an ex-defense minister under Seleka, who is now headquartered with his men in the northern town of Kagabandoro, called for autonomy, followed by full independence. The UN mission was quick to denounce this latest rebel call for autonomy. But well-armed groups like Adams have operated in the northern and eastern Kaf for years with impunity. International troops, in particular the French, are the only thing keeping rebels in check at the moment, says Central Africa expert Roland Marshall of the Sciences Po University in Paris.
What we know is France has been eager to reduce its troops on Syria right now. Hungary is up to 900 soldiers. I think the French government would like to get that number down up to maybe 600, if possible even less, 450. So that means that the international military component of the intervention would be much less powerful in 1 year than today.
French and regional troops deployed to Dakar in late 2014 as the Seleka were chased from power and intercommunal killing broke out, pitting Christians against Muslims, ultimately killing thousands. There are currently 9,000 UN peacekeepers in the country. Once a new government is elected, rebuilding the national army could take years. Katerina Hoye for VA News, Bamako.
Arab media are reporting that the UN Special Envoy for Libya is continuing negotiations on a unity agreement after the leaders of the country's two rival legislatures rejected the deal that was to be signed yesterday, Wednesday, in Morocco. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
A small crowd applauded as Libya's rival parliament speakers Nouri Boussahmane and Akila Saleh grasped hands and lifted them in the air in a gesture of unity during talks in Malta. But both men acknowledged a final agreement had yet to be reached. Speaker Akila Saleh of the Tobruk-based Libyan parliament told a news conference it was necessary to put together a broad-based government. He says that he has asked the UN envoy's office to postpone the naming of the members of Libya's unity government so as to be sure they represent the authentic will of the people. Speaker Nouri Boussahmane of the Tripoli-based General National Congress indicated the final agreement had been put off in order to iron out a number of disagreements. He says that the agreement has been postponed for several days due to logistic reasons, and committees will meet soon to discuss all the outstanding disagreements. Al Arabiya TV reported UN Special Envoy Martin Kobler was meeting with members of the Libyan parliament in the eastern town of Baida to try to hammer out a final deal. Tripoli-based parliament member Abu Bakr Ahmed told Libyan TV Western delegations are due in Morocco for a signing ceremony they expect will take place Thursday. Jabala Ashaibani of the rival Tobruk-based parliament indicated he was not pleased with the way the final agreement was shaping up. He claims the United Nations is proposing a protectorate representing European and Western interests and is not concerned about the worries or interests of the Libyan people. Analyst Ismail Mahaishi told Libya's Al Ahrar TV, the basis of the UN-brokered deal is to avoid either side triumphing over the other and to pressure both to compromise. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 17th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Let's give a shout-out to listeners on our affiliate stations, Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda, and Radio Hot Coco in Bamenda, Cameroon. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. Cameroonian authorities are urging more northerners to join self-defense groups to fight Boko Haram. The call comes after several recent successes scored by the self-defense groups working in collaboration with the military, including reports that the vigilantes intercepted and killed two young female suicide bombers in a border town earlier this week. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports for VOA from Yaoundé.
Bubakari Alium lives in the town of Amchide that straddles the border of Cameroon and Nigeria. 2 years ago, Boko Haram fighters attacked the town and killed 30 people, including his father and only brother. The 27-year-old shop owner joined the community self-defense force.
We are in a jeep to travel our journey. That is,
he told VOA by phone that they are divided into teams that patrol the mountainous areas, villages, markets, mosques, and farms day and night. He says they ask all suspects to surrender from a distance and then call the military for intervention. But he says if a suspect reaches for anything, they shoot him with poisoned bows and arrows. He says they also report all strangers and suspected collaborators to the military. The Nigerian militant sect began attacking in northern Cameroon in late 2014 and has since also expanded attacks into Chad and Niger. In northern Cameroon, militants have routinely targeted civilians, burning and looting villages, planting landmines, and attacking markets and other public places with suicide bombers. Mamudu Aji, a community leader in Amchide, who recruits young people, says not everyone who asks to join the self-defense groups is admitted for fear of infiltration. He says they do background checks into applicants' morality and patriotism. He says they only recruit people from the area who have not traveled to be sure they have not been intoxicated with extremist ideas. He says that decision was taken after a retired policeman returned home and started collaborating with Boko Haram. Aji says the young men get some training from the military and have recently begun some joint patrols. The young men are asking for motorcycles and food to help them broaden and extend their patrols in the hills at the border. The governor of Far North Cameroon, Mijiyawa Bakari, says the government has made provisions in its 2016 budget to support the self-defense groups, but declined to give further details. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
A new study by the International Labour Organization finds that migrant workers account for more than 150 million of the estimated 232 million people who migrate every year to countries around the world. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the launch of the report at the ILO headquarters in Geneva.
Migration and migrants are headline news these days, and not all the reports are flattering. The International Labour Organization says government policy debates regarding migration often are divisive and based on inaccurate information. Authors of the report say they hope to set the record straight by presenting reliable evidence on the true nature of migration. A just-issued ILO report is based on data from 176 countries and territories representing nearly 100% of the working-age population, which includes those 15 years and older. The report finds a majority of migrant workers are men, but women account for 44%, a significant proportion of the working force. It says labor migration occurs in all regions of the world, but most people head for high-income countries in Northern America and Northern, Southern, and Western Europe in search of work. It adds more than one-third of all migrant workers are in the Arab states. The report focuses on migrants who are currently employed or unemployed and seeking work. It recognizes the problem of so-called irregular migration, but has no numbers, as such migrants live largely in the shadows of society and don't appear in national statistics. The ILO says the vast majority of migrant workers are in the services sectors, followed by industry, including manufacturing and construction. It finds 7.7% of all migrant workers are domestic workers, with 80% of them women. The report is putting a special focus on migrant domestic workers because it is one of the least regulated sectors of the economy. ILO Conditions of Work and Equality Department Director Manuela Tome says domestic workers provide services in private households where they are exposed to labor exploitation and serious abuses.
In many countries, domestic work is not regarded as work. And therefore, irrespective of who is performing domestic work, national or migrants, that person does not benefit from, the protection of labor laws, social security regimes, and all the machinery that ensures, compliance with the law.
The International Labour Organization says migrants need work, but many destination economies also need migrant workers, and this need will increase in the coming years. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In Zimbabwe, the Speaker of the National Assembly, Jacob Mudenda, says Parliament will provide facilities for breastfeeding lawmakers to care for their babies during parliamentary sessions. Erwin Chifera of VOA Zimbabwe program reports from Harare.
Mudenda made the remarks after lawmaker Priscilla Misaira Mwimushonga of the Movement for Democratic Change formation led by Professor Walshman Ngube brought a baby in the chamber to complain that Parliament is not women-friendly. She said Parliament standing rules and orders have no provision allowing lawmakers time out to breastfeed. Ms. Aira Mwimushonga said even the Constitution accords equal opportunities to men and women to participate in political activities, yet parliamentary rules did not provide the same opportunities.
As long as we are hamstrung by inability to be able to do so, because we have to look after it. As it is today, it's an important debate today. I don't have any question about it. So I have to come here and debate. But I understand because I looked at the standing rules and orders, and there's no provision that allows somebody to bring in a baby.
Mudenda said lawmaker Priscilla Misaira Mwimushonga's observation was correct and Parliament would provide facilities for nursing legislators to bring babies so that they can participate in debates and go back to breastfeed on Parliament premises. Misaira left the house with a baby after the Speaker's ruling as babies are not allowed in the house. Harare worker Lois Mukombe applauded the decision taken by Parliament.
I think it's very important because, you see, there are some women who are professionals who spend most of their times at work, and sometimes they would want to be with their children. Yeah, sometimes they cannot leave them with their maids. And there's a time in which a child has to be with her mother.
Zimbabwe's labor laws grant workers 3 months maternity leave and 1 hour for nursing during working hours after the 3 months, but some friendly companies and organizations provide extra hours for breastfeeding mothers. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on football. Following a meeting chaired by the Sierra Leone head of state, Ernest Koroma, on Wednesday, the Sierra Leone Football Association has reinstated a 7-man committee set up to identify delegates for the next Sierra Leone Football Association Congress. The federation had dissolved the committee. In the second segment of an interview with my colleague James Batty, Sierra Leone's sports minister Paul Kamara elaborates on the government's position.
What we have done is that the FA does not have the mandate to lawful standing to dissolve the 7-man committee established by FIFA. At the same time, FIFA continues to support them against the interests of the club that they don't recognize. Who is going to stand now for the clubs of this country? Now look how FIFA has been discredited. Look at the blatant corruption that has long existed in FIFA. So we are not going to take that anymore. We are not on a neo-colonialist mentality. We have maintained our position and we will maintain it. And if it costs us to go further to challenge FIFA this time, we will mobilize public opinion and I will appeal to my fellow ministers of sport in Africa so that they can consider my case. But enough is enough. We must put a stop to FIFA.
That was Sierra Leone's sports minister Paul Kamara speaking in Freetown, Sierra Leone. Meanwhile, South Africa Football Association, SAFA, has set targets for their men's and women's teams that have qualified for the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics in Brazil. SAFA National Executive Committee member Nomsa Mahlangu has the details.
Our celebrities, the team that qualified for the Olympics 2016 in Rio, and Banyana Banyana, the team that paved the way for us as the under-23 to be able to qualify. I think it's important for South Africa to realize that Vision 2022 is a reality, because the vision says we want to be top 3 in Africa and we want to be in the top 20 in the world. And having qualified for the Olympics in both the men and women means that at under-23 level, we are part of the top 3, and also in women's football.
That was Nomsa Mahlangu, South Africa Football Association and National Executive Committee member, speaking in Johannesburg, South Africa. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Omar in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. National and regional leaders in Somalia have ended 3 days of talks in the capital Mogadishu on how best to hold elections in 2016. The leaders decided to dissolve the government next September, but are now prohibiting President Hassan Sheikh Mohamed and the 275 members of parliament from seeking re-election. The assembly also decided the next election model would be based on a combination of district and clan process, a compromise that emerged because the country's main regions are split on whether to task responsibility of electing the lawmakers to clan elders or district representatives. Somalia's first government after a prolonged civil war was chosen by 135 clan leaders who met in Mogadishu in 2012. And opposition leaders in central Ethiopia say security forces have killed more than 40 people in recent weeks amid protests against a government development plan. Demonstrators began holding rallies late last month over a plan to expand the city limits of Addis Ababa, the capital. Critics in Ethiopia's Oromia region say the plan would display local farmers and rob the area of its autonomy. And that's it for this Thursday, December 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford and reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Barty in Washington saying have a lovely day, Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.
Music time in Africa.
savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Friday at 0900 and Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 15, 20, and 2200 hours UTC.